This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 32 and my name is Peter Higgins and you can find me on Twitter at Conkers3 on Twitter, and I'm here with my good colleague Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. Hiya Pete, and how are you, mate, today?
Yeah, not bad, mate, not bad. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm doing all right. Despite all the various U-turns that I'm having to navigate and stuff that I'm doing.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, we're having to do what we have to do, mate. You know, I think we all have to get used to the fact that this isn't over yet. The final whistle hasn't been blown and it's likely to continue for some time. So, you know, as they say, brace yourself. There's more to come.
Yeah, I mean, Boris was saying 6 months, and it was funny. I'm so stupid, I can't believe sometimes. I was sort of hearing 6 months, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, 6 months. And then it sort of dawned on me that you're talking October, November, December, January, February, March. I'm thinking, hang on, that's into like Q2 next year, you know, sort of April. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, we're all going to go insane by that time.
Well, I mean, the irony is that we've done 6 months, Pete. Obviously, it's been flexible with all the different changes and all the different things that have been changed and renegotiated and amended and so on and so forth. We've just done 6 months, essentially, from when the main lockdown was pushed. And 6 months on, we're braced for potentially another 6 months, you know. And I think there'll be some flexibility around that as well, depending on what happens going forward. But I think that the thing, and I work with and support quite a few charities, a few pubs. I mean, I put a picture out today regarding one of the charities I support, which is Hope Against Cancer in Leicestershire, and we're promoting a takeaway curry meal, which a friend of mine runs this curry place. Called the Chutney Ivy, and we pushed it this month. It's still in September, and we're going to push it again in October. So it supports the restaurant and it supports the charity.
Yeah,
but a lot of these businesses and charities have been really hamstrung by COVID, because a lot of the businesses that normally would support them haven't got the monies because they haven't had the revenues themselves, so they can't be giving it to charities. And a lot of these restaurants, pubs and bars have only just reopened or got started again and looking to generate some revenue. And they had the help out scheme, or whatever it was called, to help them. And now that's been pulled. And now they've been told, actually, your restaurant or your pub needs to shut at 10 o'clock.
So if you think about it, shutting at 10 o'clock actually means that really your last food orders are going to be 9. You know, so it's sort of pulling everything forward a bit. But I mean, a lot of sort of foodie pubs have been saying on the news and stuff, they lose a whole sitting of customers. Of course. And when your revenues are so low and your cost base is fixed to an extent, you know, that one sitting could be the difference between just about profitable and not, or just about break even and not, you know. So it's devastating for so many of them.
It is, mate. Which is why you're seeing now, with the furlough scheme ending in August, yeah. I say August. A lot of the companies which had the furlough scheme and were looking to keep people on, they're seeing it coming to an end, yeah. And they're already making redundancies, or have made redundancies, or planning to make now new redundancies. Whitbread have come out, haven't they, and said they're going to cut 6,000 staff. You know, yeah, so the Premier Inn.
6,000, lot of people.
That's a lot of people, Pete.
A lot of people.
So you're going to see the employment numbers slowly and steadily rising going forward. And which industry is going to pick up the slack within the next 6 months if we're on a greater and greater degree of lockdown again?
Yeah, you just can't see it, can you? I mean, there was talk. I just picked it up before we started this call. We're starting this call at about 5:45. on, was it Wednesday, innit? And, on the news, they were saying that there won't be a budget this year. You know, Rishi Sunak is not going to do a budget. And tomorrow, on the Thursday, he's going to do some sort of statement about what kind of help he's going to do as a replacement for the furlough scheme. But presumably it won't be as generous, presumably.
Well, you would hope they would do something, Pete, because that will enable some people to keep their jobs. But he might need to also do something regarding the Eat Out to Help Out scheme, you know, which sounds like a bit of a contradiction if you're saying to people, stay at home, you know, if you can work at home, stay at home sort of thing. He's going to need to do something for when the bars and pubs are open in the earlier sessions to actually promote something in a certain way that people can actually support the local pubs and, you know, and restaurants.
I can't see it, Pete,
because it will strike across the 10 o'clock closing that he's trying to push.
Yeah.
And the push against, you know, people going to work and so on and so forth. So I don't know if he can do that one, but he could certainly save the money there and help regarding the furlough scheme and get people to actually maintain employment so that can be supported to continue working for their companies at home.
Maybe it will be like VAT reductions and things like that again or something. But
we'll wait and see.
But I mean, the thing that scares me down the line is what impact this is having on the public finances. I think we've got into I don't know how it's happened, but we've got into this kind of, I think it's called modern monetary theory, where this sort of idea that if you've got a central bank, it can just effectively print money all the time and you can borrow indefinitely. I just think it's nonsense. I really think it's nonsense. I think you can do it to a point, but there must become a point where you're just going to crush your currency. And if the pound tanks, then you're going to cause massive inflation because of the cost of imports and stuff. So I just, you know, the idea that it's sustainable to have a situation where government spending is absolutely massive and pretty out of control from what I can tell, but at the same time you're not getting tax receipts, you know, tax receipts must be absolutely crushed. So none of it makes any sense, and I can see a debt crisis coming. I just think things look pretty bleak, really.
Well, I hope they've got some sort of magic bullet, Pete, in the next 6 months to address a lot of the issues. I think, unfortunately, where we are at the moment is one of discontent, in a sense of, you know, the main Conservative/Tory voter, even they are getting to the point where they're like, oh my gosh, you know what I mean?
So there must be
unless they are so ardent in their view that he can do no wrong, because right now you've got a situation where everybody's been impacted, you know, again, and at some point or other that impact leads to people, you know, questioning their allegiance to various other views and viewpoints that they had earlier in the year. I saw a tweet going back to January, somebody was circulating again, and it's a tweet from Boris, I think it's January the 2nd or January the 3rd, saying 2020 is going to be the best year ever.
I saw that, yeah.
And that was from him. It wasn't somebody had tweaked and messed about with and compromised. It was from him. And unfortunately, it's not been the best year. And, you know, COVID-19 has nothing to do with him. He's of no fault of his at all, or the Conservative Party. But when something happens, you've got to have a team in place that has a strategy to deal with these things. That's what they're putting power for. And they've not stepped up to the mark thus far. And they've got essentially 3 months to capture the imagination of the UK public, as to show that they're actually dealing with this and have actually got a strategy, and they haven't got any more U-turns to do. And so that people can get back on board and on side. Because once there's mistrust and discontent, the less likely for people to follow the rules that are being put into place to safeguard the people that are vulnerable, Pete. That's my concern.
Well, interesting as well, you know, politically, is that however you cut it, the Tories have got a big majority.
Yeah.
But what the nub of it will be how long Boris lasts. And if Boris doesn't get a grip, and to be quite frank, I don't think he will, the word is he's got 6 months. And the Tory grandees will turn on him. And to be honest, rightly so. I mean, if we carry on with the fiasco we've had so far, then, you know, he doesn't really deserve to be PM. Whatever. I mean, I wanted Brexit, so I was very happy when he got in power, but I'm not happy now.
Well, I suspect you're not the only one, Pete. Let's talk a bit more cheerful, Pete. What in the market, or which stocks in the market have given you cheer, given the fact that, you know, we had people hiding behind sofas again and full body armour on Monday when the markets tanked, and then we've had 2 days of the markets being up now, so, you know, lots of other people are happier with the markets today. What's catching your attention, mate?
Well, one that I noticed this morning was First Property, FPO, which, funnily enough, is the one that's run by Ben Habib, the mad keen Brexiteer bloke. But anyway, don't let that stand against him if that's not your view. The interesting thing with FPO is, I didn't look at it this afternoon, but this morning it was 34 pence a share. But the interesting thing was that they've got 19.6 pence of cash.
What?
So well over half of the market cap is cash. Now, what they do is they do like property in Poland. I think mainly Poland. I think they've got some in Romania. And what was interesting as well was they had the rent collection for, you know, the tables for it. And it was sort of over 90% rent collection, you know, for the last quarter or whatever it was, which, you know, looked pretty decent, really. And, I mean, I don't know how much Poland and Romania have been affected by COVID. I mean, you never really hear about them on the news. But the thing with Poland is, as far as I can tell, the economy of Poland is very linked to the economy of Germany. And Germany is probably doing better than a lot of economies because it seems to have much more grip on COVID-19. So, you know, so Poland could be quite well placed. So I think that's quite an interesting situation. And with over half of the market cap in cash, then your margin of safety, classic, you know, was it Benjamin Graham stuff, Warren Buffett stuff, your margin of safety is pretty big, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like. I always like a company with a little bit of cash sloshing around, Pete, to do whatever it wants to do, because it means that, you know, they don't have to come back and dilute me or any other shareholder going forward. You know, we've seen how many places the market's had to deal with since January or year to date, and staggering amounts of money have been raised. So a lot of companies aren't as fortunate to have that kind of cash sloshing around, so that's really, really good.
Sounds like you're sloshed, mate. Walter sloshed.
Yeah.
So is that one you're looking to
invest in, Pete, or is that one you hold?
No, I don't hold it. It's one I've looked at many a time. It's covered by Simon Thompson in the Investors Chronicle.
Right,
so if anyone gets that, it'd be worth having a look through the archives and whatever. But, you know, it's got quite a good track record. You know, they've done a good job over the years. So, yeah, it's one that I'm definitely positive towards. I mean, I'm not really in the market for stock at the moment because, you know, all my slots are filled. I'm not really looking to sell anything particularly. You know, as and when a slot becomes available in my portfolio, it's certainly something I might consider if it's still in that kind of situation.
Okie dokie. I mean, because the thing for me is, with companies that are, you know, obviously it's property related, they're dealing with rents and so on and so forth, there's a lot of, you know, macro stuff that could impact them, but it softens the blow when you've got cash on the balance, you know what I mean, to deal with the unknowns that are going forward. So that's an interesting one, Pete.
And also, it's when you've got a good history. You know, FPO I've been aware of for probably 15 years or more. And, you know, over that period, it's generally done pretty well and done some pretty shrewd things, like starting a property fund. So it's like an asset manager of a property fund. So that's quite, you know, as well as investing in property itself. So it's done some pretty shrewd stuff. Hey, on property and on Germany, I heard something today that was quite interesting about German banks. I think it was on Ian King, they mentioned it on Sky News.
Yeah, okay.
And what they were saying was that I didn't catch all of it. I was sort of doing other things, so I wasn't really listening. But what I seemed to pick up was that some German bank has announced today that it pretty much got no need for branches anymore. And it's converting a load of its branches into offices. And it's doing so much online and doing so much on Zoom and so much over the phone that it's almost like branches are irrelevant now.
Pete, please don't mention that to the Metro shareholders, mate. You know, that they're branching out and branching out, and there's going to be a takeover at £3.
Remember when we talked about Metro, didn't we, in the dog bowl?
I mean, I
think about with Metro, MTRO.
Yeah, I've had so much abuse from that, and that's about a year ago that I mentioned people shouldn't be buying that at £2.70. And I don't even know what the share price is now, do you? Is it 70 pence now?
I bet it's a lot lower. Hang on, let me get my trusty ADVFN app. Good advert for ADVFN there. Right, where is it? What were we looking for? Metro, wasn't
it? Metro, MTRO, Pete.
MTRO.
Metro Bank.
Metro Bank. They're knocking those out, mate. 70p.
70p, there you go.
Jesus.
No takeover. Officer. Other companies are getting rid of their branches. I mean, there's lots of stuff going on at Twitter at the minute, and I've got to give a shout out to Go Left Massa and Phil Oakley again for the second week.
Oh, Ben and Phil.
Phil Oakley on Twitter. People are getting fed up, Pete, because a lot of stocks, and I'm not just picking on Metro here, a lot of stocks are being ramped and promoted and coordinated promotion of stocks by various people, some well-respected people as well. It's not just about, I mean, I know you go on sometimes on Twitter and you go AIM junk, this, that and the other. There are some very good companies on AIM, and the art of selecting and researching them is where you will make your significant profits. And even better, if you can find these stocks before, as I call them, the herd arrives, because invariably they will, right? But Phil and Go Left Massa have been raising similar things that we've raised on numerous podcasts in the past, is research your stock. Don't follow the rampers. Don't follow the people promoting the stock. If you see a stock suddenly spiking 10, 20, 30%, which before had very little volume in the stock or the share, there's a reason why that's happening. Because somewhere on the lines, on no news, lots of people have been in the background talking to each other. And suddenly, via numerous different accounts, they're all talking about this stock. And invariably, in some occasions, there's some people talking to themselves. What am I saying when I say that? I'm saying that in a sense of there's people with more than one account talking about a stock, talking to themselves, right? And they will then have other people in their cohort talking about this stock and talking about this share. And this includes some very well-respected people who have got 100, 200, 3,000, 4,000 followers on Twitter. Yeah? So if you see a stock moving and you think, oh, crikey, that's moving all of a sudden, I'll buy that. Don't.
Right? There's just so much of it about. I mean,
go back, you know, do some research, have a look at the stock, have a look at the Twitter accounts, see what's being talked about, and have a look, because unfortunately you will get left on a spike. Yeah, you'll be holding that stock longer than you need to be doing. Yeah, just because that person's got a significant amount of followers doesn't mean that what they're sharing with you is for your own good. Sometimes it's about them looking after themselves to get liquidity in a stock for themselves so they can exit. It isn't about sharing information to you about a good stock. Check the quality of the directors, check the quality of the performance. And going back to what you said about FPOP, check whether they've got any cash, because invariably there could be a placing 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 2 months down the line, which wipes you out because it's discounted by 25-30%,
which is often linked to the sort of ramping activities. When there's a placing coming, you'll find that there's a lot of ramping just before. Funny that, isn't it?
Funny that.
But I mean, go on.
Sorry, Pete. The other thing that's happened as well, and one of the stocks that did it this week, was positive news came out regarding contracts, so on and so forth, right? A significant contract, in fact. But this is it's a manufacturing company. It's highly cyclical, right? So if you've got highly cyclical stock, they can't tell you what their profits are going to be 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years out, right? So you've got to be mindful that when they say we're doing really, really well, yeah, It's about what's happened in the past 3 months and 6 months. They can't tell you what's going to happen in the next 3 months or 6 months or a year, because they can't see it, because it's a cyclical stock. We're a manufacturing stock as well. They've got even more hurdles to follow. So Billington came out with a massive contract. I think it was Monday.
B-I-L-N-L.
Came out with a massive contract.
Structural steel people or something, yeah, isn't it?
That's what they're involved in. And they came out with a massive contract when huge news, brilliant news. Next day, rubbish results, essentially.
Oh, really? I saw the contract news. I mean, it's not a company that I'm interested in. I saw the contract news, and I sort of jumped up. So I didn't realise it had come out with some stuff after that.
Yeah, I say rubbish. It wasn't great. But the people that are extremely bullish on the stock didn't really see much wrong with the stock. But, you know, you've got to look behind the facade, really, of what's really going on with some of these stocks and know what to see in the stock. And also, you've got to look back at what the company said previously, because earlier on in the year, the CEO, CFO came out and said, we can't see the visibility. We can't tell you how good this company is going to be or how bad it's going to be. So, you know, be mindful.
You know, I mean, that comes back to what we were saying before about, you know, the situation with the public finances in the UK and stuff like that. These kind of companies, you know, steel building companies and all that kind of thing, and house builders and construction companies, they are massively cyclical. So when the mood, you know, the mood in the economy goes bad, when the government hasn't got any money, these kinds of companies are going to suffer.
They are, Pete. I mean, I'm looking at the notes here, and the profits were, use the word right, went from, I won't say, you know, how bad they are, they went from 2.7 million to just 0.6 net operating cash flow, operating cash flow of just 0.3 million. Yeah, so, you know, that's a big drop when you're looking at a company of that sort of size as well. So you've just got to read the results yourself, compare and contrast for yourself, and know what it is that you're looking for, because, you know, you've got a company that's it's only small as well, Pete. It's a 38 sub 40 million pound company.
So it's going to be illiquid as a stock, isn't it?
So it's really quite illiquid, and, you know, trading the stock isn't great when you've got a bid offer of £3 to £3.14. So getting in and out of that stock isn't great either. You've got a 14 pence gap from top to bottom.
That's a lot. Mate, while we're on stocks, can I just bring up Song?
Pete, if you didn't bring it up, I was going to bring it up, mate. They're raising money left, right and centre, mate. So go on.
Oh, no, it's quite interesting. I actually hold Song, yeah? That's the Hipgnosis Songs Fund, which actually we've talked about in the podcast before. What is interesting, I mean, there's been so much happening. The first thing I wanted to highlight, and I don't think a lot of people have realised the significance, yeah? Up until recently, Song was a company that bought catalogues from songwriters, yeah? And what they do is they take the revenue stream from the royalties, which is effectively micropayments. So it's like every time, so say for instance that song Titanium, yeah, you know, David Guetta and Sia, yeah, Titanium, one of them, absolutely massive song. They've got the rights to Titanium. So every time Titanium is played anywhere, they get a micropayment. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like tiddly amounts. But the thing is, all these micropayments add up. Anyway, so they bought loads of catalogues, and that's what they're doing. What's got interesting is that they bought a company in America that does the same thing. Does, like, you know, buys catalogues, yeah? But there's two differences with this company. The first one is that it actually invests in new songwriting talent. So, you know, it backs new songwriters to write songs. So it's going to have the ownership of that content from the start. So that's quite an interesting thing. And it seems to have a record of doing that. The other bit is interesting is that this company specializes, it has a division that specializes in collecting the micropayments. And Song reckons that there are bits of micropayment, if you like, that it hasn't been able to collect up until now. But with this addition of this new bit of administration, they'll now be able to get those outstanding micropayments. So I think that's quite an interesting change.
That is a, that adds a bit more power to their elbow, Pete, most definitely, because if they've been missing out on even fractional payments, that those accumulated over time will definitely add some weight to their balance sheet going forward. And it's another bit of tech that they can use actually to sell what they're doing to some of the artists that have been missing out on said payments as well.
That's
definitely a win-win. I mean, my only criticism of them is that each time they find something they want to buy, they come back for another 50 mil, 100 mil, 250 mil. I'm thinking, crikey, how much money have these guys raised so far? It must be getting on towards £1 billion by now, Pete, is it not?
Oh, yeah, it's probably more than that. Well, put it this way. I'm not sure what it is, but they've actually said that they're looking at a pipeline of £1 billion.
Wow. Okay.
But the thing is, if they're going to grow, there's no way they can really grow without doing that.
Yeah. I understand.
And I guess to an extent, it's a bit of first mover advantage. They've got to crack on and buy as many good catalogues as they can before other people get them.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. I mean, the thing that caught my eye today, and I read it this morning, I was like, oh, crikey, that's a nice little deal. And I looked at the share price, I thought, okay, yeah, they've done all right so far. And then, wallop, this morning, and all day, it appears, everyone's been buying the stock. No one was interested in this stock before. and it ended up, Pete, up 26% today, right?
What did Song?
No, not Song.
Sorry,
Your day will come.
I nearly flipped out now. I'm thinking, what's he doing?
No. You've not missed Song.
I hold it. And I'm thinking, what? It's my lucky day.
The stock I'm talking about is the technical products and services provider, Diploma, Pete.
Yeah. DPLM, yeah.
DPLM. And they'd raised $194 million through a share sale, right, to fund its acquisition of Windy City Wire Cable and Technology Products. Okay. So they announced that on Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
At a price of £17 a share, they raised £190 million, right? And the company also raised £4 million from retail equity offering. I'm not sure which platform they used, right? Today, the shares popped, mate. Every man and his dog wanted that share, right? And it ended up 26% today.
Wow. Yeah.
So the stock at the minute, year to date, plus 7%, 1 year up 31%. And this is where we're going back to. I'll keep banging on about this. Back in March/April, when we had the COVID interference, all the stocks got sold off. People sold off. Those without cash were unable to buy back or buy any stock because they didn't have any cash because we're fully invested, right? You could have picked up Diploma, were you brave enough, right? At £11.91. Pete.
Oh.
Yeah, in March. Today, having risen 26%, it's £21.72.
So it's doubled, pretty much.
Pretty much doubled, mate.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's the stock today, which has surprised a lot of people. They're involved in healthcare, environmental, defence, you name it. They're involved in that sort of space. And you know what? Given this acquisition they've made, who knows where it goes from now, because obviously it's going to get a re-rating from here. So, yeah, that's one to keep an eye on, folks. And just,
They do like industrial seals, don't they? I mean,
that's the one.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's one with a very good history. There's a lot to like. It's the classic thing, isn't it? It's like, the trouble is, when it's down at 11 quid, you've got to have a particular kind of brain to be brave enough to press that buy trigger.
You do, But I think the caveat I would give, and I say this to a lot of people regarding certain stocks, is that when a good quality or high quality stock is on offer, right, the reverse psychology kicks in. Nobody wants to buy it, right? When a good quality stock is in a 3-year, 4-year, 5-year, 10-year high, fear of missing out and momentum traders want to buy it and investors want to buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah? So today, more people want to buy the stock at 21 quid, yeah, £21, than they did at 11, 12, 13, 14 or 15, or yesterday when it was available at £17. It's just, for me, this is about the psychology of search, do your research, find the high quality stock, and if you think it's too expensive, put it on your watch list and wait until it becomes an offer. It was an offer in March and April, and at any time during that time, you could have bought it at sub £12, sub £13, 12, £14, and even recently at £16. Buy it then. Yeah?
Because I mean, in some ways, it's also easier if you hold a stock already. So say, for instance, you already held Diploma, and it was one that you were pretty happy to keep holding, and it dropped down to 11 quid, it might have been easier to buy more Diploma than it would have been as a fresh buy, not into it.
Yes, that does help.
Psychologically,
absolutely. If you believe in the stock and you've got some cash in your portfolio to utilize, you know, and it became available having been, you know, it previously it had been, where had it been? Let's have a look. Yeah. So it was there at £17. Yeah. Back in April before the dip. And then obviously it fell away. All the way away, and then it obviously is back again at £17 yesterday, yeah, which is the previous high that it had before the dip. So it was an opportunity to buy it again, but nobody wanted to buy it yesterday, and today they all want to buy it. But the reason why I say it's a quality company as well is if you go back and look, and I keep going on about the total returns, that's yield and capital gains on the share. This is a quality stock that was yielding over 10 years annualized total returns of 21.8%, Pete, over 10 years. That's brilliant, mate. Yeah?
Oh, yeah. It's such a great record, isn't
it? Yeah. So 5 years, you're looking at 24%. Yeah? 3 years total annualized, 17%. That's a quality stock to have in your portfolio. But, you know, every 3 years, you're doubling your investment at, you know, on what you've invested in that stock, having bought it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's brilliant.
It's the obvious thing where you need to do some sanity checks before you buy it at 11 quid when the world is crashing, such as you want to make sure nothing really material has changed. So, for instance, if all the directors have just changed in the last couple of weeks or something, that might be a reason to worry. Or if it's been a bad company, it's often a good thing that they've changed directors. But, you know, say, for instance, the CFO has just left or something and he's been with the company for 10 years, that might be a little bit worrying, you know. So it's things like that you need to do sanity checks, if you like, but you don't just blindly buy 11 quid.
No, I would never advocate blindly buying.
Which
goes back to what we keep reiterating on here. Don't blindly buy a stock just because somebody who's got a lot of followers on Twitter or writes something really, really eloquently or is deemed to be bright. Just don't blindly follow it because he or she says that it's a good stock or gives it a green tick in the morning. Read, research it, and then go back and decide whether or not it is worthy of your money, because at the end of the day, it is your money that you're putting at risk. Every single time you hit that buy button, it's your money. And every time that you sell, it's you that's rewarding yourself. And if you've rewarded yourself by doing the research and then the market rewards you, that's the warmest fuzzy feeling you're going to get. You're not going to get the same feeling if you just copied somebody, and you're not going to learn anything long term if you're just copying somebody.
Well, that's such a good point. It's like, if you're just copying people all the time, that's great until the person you're copying disappears.
Disappears, yeah.
And then, like, who are you going to copy now? You know, it's, yeah. If people are intrigued by what we're saying about, you know, all the kind of ramping activity and stuff you get on AIM, I wrote
Pete, stop there.
On everything.
AIM and on the FTSE, mate.
On everything. I wrote a blog recently, which was, it's on the educational blogs page on my website, and it was entitled What Kind of Returns Should Short-Term Traders Be Making? And in there, I actually put a list of what gives away a ramping account on Twitter. So it might be worth looking at if you're new to the game and you're worried.
Okie dokie.
Mate, something to quickly mention on Song before I forget it. Two things. Firstly, they bought a catalogue of Chrissy Hynde the other day, which is a great catalogue to have. 460 songs or something, which is, You know, some big hits there. The other thing that was interesting, someone mentioned to me, a good mate mentioned to me the other day, that they weren't keen on Song because it was a new thing. And I was thinking about that and mulling it over. And I sort of thought about it. I thought, well, I don't think that's really the case. Because, you know, Songs have had royalty payments for years. What's new is that it's all shifting to online and to streaming and to collection of micropayments by electronic means and whatever. And if anything, I think it's a massive opportunity because, you know, there's more access to music today than there's ever been before. It's like kids today or anyone today can just basically listen to any kind of music they want pretty much. You know, you get a subscription to Spotify or even on YouTube and that for free, you can pretty much find anything. And every time you're listening to that, there's a micropayment if it's a catalogue that Song owns. So it's, you know, I think the music industry is massively opening up and becoming much more sort of democratic, if you like, much more equal.
Yeah, and I think the benefit of what's going on is that the artists, the writers and all the people involved in the making of that music or those songs going forward actually get a fairer slice.
Mm.
Whereas before it was just the record company taking a larger and larger chunk. So you're seeing more and more artists remaining independent, and therefore they want to see the collection being made appropriately regarding what's being generated for them, because they've got to have a body of people to actually collate all the different references what have been made regarding their songs, so they get paid accordingly. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Pete,
I wanted to touch on
AA, which a lot of people were talking about earlier on in the year and the past couple of months.
Oh yeah, AA dot, which I hold.
AA, because it's one of those stocks which was a private, you know, a private company. It got floated again, loaded with debt, and it's been ravaged by various different things, obviously. And what has been happening over the past 3 to 6 months? I didn't know you held it, by the way, so apologies.
Oh yeah, no, I've got it.
But. A lot of people have been talking about it and saying, oh, this is going to be a takeover stock. It's a takeover stock. It's heavily indebted, Pete. It's been impacted by COVID, obviously. And now there's been muted. A lot of companies were looking at it. Yeah. So there was a talk about this stock being taken over at 40 pence, 50 pence, 60 pence, whatever it was, by a private company. But today it fell significantly. I think it was down, was it 17% or something like that at the close of play?
I don't know, it was down a lot when I looked earlier.
Yeah, Platinum Equity were in discussion, one of, I think, three or four different companies previously. But this one has now terminated the discussion, saying they're not going to make an offer before September the 29th. So other parties are involved. I think Centrebridge are still involved.
No, I think Centrebridge are pulled out as well.
Have they? All right, okay.
Two are pulled out, yeah. I spotted that.
So what have you got left then? Warburg Pincus, is that still... Are they?
I don't know. All I know is there were like... I'm sure there was like three or four involved. I mean, I'm in sort of a couple of minds about it because I can't help thinking if it does get taken over, then any kind of value that there might have been in AA is basically going to get taken by somebody else effectively. And in some ways, if it stayed as a public company and if it did a rights issue, I think it'd probably do better in the long run.
Right. So it finished down 16%. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think part of my raising it was also about the fact that a significant number of people were talking about this stock over the past couple of months when the shares were going up from August in the low sort of 20s up to 40 pence. Yeah. And today, Pete, hardly anybody has mentioned AA. You know, as is always the case, you know, when it drops, no one talks about it. But the point I'm trying to make with this particular company is that at some point or other, something's going to happen with this company, because it was a multi-billion pound company, and it's still a significant entity regarding the insurance side of it and dealing with cars being broken down on the road and other bits and pieces that they're involved in. So at some point or other, something's going to happen. It's not a company I'm interested in, because I as you know, Pete, like my tech related sort of companies.
Yeah. But,
you know, it's one of them again to research and know why you're buying it, and don't just buy it because potentially there's a takeover, because if the takeover doesn't happen, it'll be back to the lower parts of the 20s, if not sub 20. It's down 16-17% at 28 pence plus. It's been, what's the range been on the year for this now, Pete? 15 pence to 64 pence, and it's currently sitting at 30 pence. So it's anyone's guess as to where it's going to finish.
And I think it was like this year. I think it was like £4 years ago when I bought it. So very, very upsetting how AA has turned out. It's been incredibly frustrating holding. I mean, it's the classic thing where if you buy a company with a lot of debt, you know, it's risky. And for myself, I got that one wrong. It happens, you know, but we'll see what happens.
It happens to all of us, Pete. I mean, this is the thing about what we're talking about on here, ladies and gents, right? Pete and I, we love our research. We have a passion for investing, right? But we're going to be the first ones to stick our hands up and say, phew, we got that one wrong. Right, what you're looking for from other people on Twitter, some people are just looking for entertainment value, some people are just looking to copy certain people. Right, Pete and I are on here to try and learn. We're still learning, and I keep putting tweets out every day is a school day for me, right? Learning wise,
you never stop learning in this game.
I do not get all my investments right, I make mistakes, I call it completely wrong regarding certain stocks. But I'm open to learning. I'm not going to come on Twitter and saying I'm the best thing since sliced bread, because I'm absolutely not. And neither is Pete. But you've got certain people out there that will do that day in, day out, argue the case about their stock, why their stock is the best thing since sliced bread. And their stock is not. And they have not got a crystal ball as to what's going to happen with that stock in the next 3 months or 6 months or 12 months. But they'll claim that they have. Just so be very, very careful who you're listening to and why you're following that particular person's account. If you want to learn, follow an account on Twitter that enables you to learn and to improve and to get better. And there's somebody who admits that they don't know everything about that stock, because nobody does, not even the fund managers.
Well, this is the thing. It's like, especially for younger people, well, I say younger, mate, me and you are only 28. So I'm talking about 19-year-olds here. If you're a younger person, don't be chasing around trying to buy the latest hottest stock. Change your mindset. What you need to be doing is learning. Focus on your learning for the future, because it's the learning you do that is going to make you incredibly wealthy over coming years. It isn't just buying the latest ramp. That's not going to make you wealthy. That's going to make you very miserable. But you know, it's something I wanted to bring up, actually, is this idea of consistency of returns. It's something that people don't really think about enough or understand enough. It's like people want to be making 60% on their portfolio and all this kind of thing. It's just dreamland. It's not going to happen. And the thing is, you might get 60% one year, or you might get 100% one year, but the next year you're going to lose 60%. It's just the way it goes. You're better off going for 10% a year, but doing that consistently, year in, year out, you're making 10% or whatever. And, you know, when you have a bad year, you're only losing 5%, 10% at the worst. But when you have good years, you're making 30%. And it's that aiming for consistency and then letting the money compound over the years, that is what makes you wealthy.
I completely agree. And whilst we're on that note about consistency performance, On the last podcast, Pete was talking about a chap called Michael T, and I got Michael T completely confused with someone else who I know, and he knows that he is a trader. I got Michael T completely confused with him. And Pete was talking about a chap that we both really know quite well. And I've spoken with Michael in the past.
Good lad.
About his investing. And Michael uses the username of Michael T, but his Twitter handle is Michael514928 51. So if you want to learn about investing consistently and stocks to select, and also be mindful that he doesn't tweet a lot and he only talks about the good, the bad and the indifferent regarding his stocks, not just the bullish stuff, that's an account to follow. So my apologies to Michael, I got him confused. Michael is in fact an investor, and a good investor at that. So apologies to you, Michael.
That's a good one. Hey, should we just do the markets quickly, just the high-level stuff?
Yeah, high-level stuff. We spoke about the markets capitulating on Monday because they had a bit of a wobble on the US markets the Friday before, and the stuff that was going to be said about COVID and Boris and so on and so forth. So the hiding behind the sofa and the armour placing was out on Monday, and the markets tanked, you know, and we went below sub 6,000 again on Monday. Today we almost touched 6,000 again, but we finished up 1%, and we finished up at 5,899 on the FTSE 100. The FTSE 250 is up 1% at 16,992. The FTSE All Share is at 3,286. That's up 1.1%. The AIM 100, that's at 4,825. That's up 0.42%. And the FTSE AIM All Share is still doing reasonably well, up 0.5% at 949. And just have a little check at what the FTSE AIM All Share is doing year to date. I think last time it was up 1.1%, or minus 1.14%. It's down over the one year at 3% at the minute.
It's still holding up
yeah. Very, very well, Pete. It's the strongest indices we've got at present in the UK. So, you know, I know you'd like to call them all junk, but there's some good stocks there. Do your research.
Oh, no, I've got loads of AIM companies, and there's some really excellent companies in AIM, but it's that distinction between the stuff that is just... I mean, one of the things that gets me about AIM, there was one I read about this morning, Hardeed, HDD. My goodness, I've read about that thing for 20
years, Pete, isn't it?
And nothing has changed. Nothing has changed in 20 years, and you just think, what are they doing? And you know, it's just stuff like that just drives me insane, you know. I was gonna make a point that, sorry, on the FTSE 100, firstly, interesting that we had the big flush down on Monday, big down candlestick. We had a little bit of a rally yesterday, and then today we had a really strong rally this morning, but it's interesting that it couldn't hold the high and it's dropped back. That's not a good sign. And what you need to do on the FTSE 100 is watch 5778. If that breaks lower and closes lower, that's the most important thing. It might, you know, it might drop down to 5750, but then recover during the day. But what you're really interested in is if it closes below 5778 in a material way, then we're probably going to go lower.
Yeah, and it's something that we keep reiterating to folks, just to watch that. You know, I prefer my psychological trapdoor at 6,000, but you've got the actual analytical, you know, numbers done there and crunch, Pete, and that's...
I'm very driven by the charts.
Absolutely, you've got it. That's a specific number, Pete, you know, 5778. And if that goes, you know, even I will be considering taking some stock out. You know, I've trimmed a few positions of late. I have got the stocks that are there in the background, which I started that experiment on, and some of those have done reasonably well. And I'll continue to talk about those. Some people have asked me via DMs to maybe talk about some of the stocks that I've got in the background that I'm waiting to pop, but to talk about them a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
I felt a little bit left out regarding the last doc that I spoke about, which was 4D, ticker symbol DDDD,
yeah,
which is now moved significantly from the price that I bought it at. They want me to talk about it maybe when stuff have gone up 50%, but I think the problem, Pete, is and my reluctance to do it is because I'm trying to get it so people research and find these stocks for themselves. You know what I mean? I don't want to be coming on here and talking about stocks that I've bought for people to then go out and then look at it and go, oh, that's a good stock, and 10 minutes later buy the stock.
Yeah, then we just get back in the tipping, ramping situation.
Yeah, I don't, that this podcast will never become a tipping podcast, folks. There's plenty of other podcasts you can go and listen to which will tip shares for you all day long. You know, and some of those tips will be good.
And you'll lose money.
But what Pete and I are trying to advocate here is for you to do some research yourself. Because when you find that stock and it goes up 10, 20, 30% and it becomes successful, that's how you learn. And you think, all right, how did I do that then? I did it this way and it led to this. And it won't work for all stocks, but you'll improve and you'll prove. And, you know, from if today is the first day that you do some serious research and you continue that, this compounds over the years. So Pete and I will see something within an RNS now and we'll go, uh-oh, that's not good.
Mm.
Yeah, because we've been reading these RNSs now for 20 odd plus years. Yeah, and when you read something within your own stock, sometimes that triggers you to go, actually, I've called this one wrong. You know, it's time for me to move on. You know, it's a mistake I've made, or the company's not actually delivered. And you've got to decide, you know, it's had enough time, because the longer you're in the stock and it's not doing so well, it's costing you money.
Yeah. Opportunity cost, isn't it?
Opportunity cost. You know, that's probably a topic we need to discuss a bit further going forward. Mm. But, you know, and it also impacts your psychology, because it stops you from making other decisions when you've got stuff in your portfolio festering. Yeah. When everything's going up with the market and you've got stocks that are in the red, it impacts your positivity and your psychology, folks. So think about it. And the positivity that you can get from researching a stock, finding it yourself, and it doing well.
Talking about stocks you hold like that, I mean, a good framework is what I've said before, this idea of, is the stock an income stock, is the stock a growth stock, or is the stock a recovery stock? If it doesn't fill any three of those criteria, then maybe you shouldn't be holding it.
That's a good point, Pete. The thing I would add to that as well, given the circumstances that we're in and where we started this conversation regarding COVID and Boris,
yeah,
is also, depending on the stocks that you're looking at, I would say for at least the next minimum of 6 months to a year, it goes back to what we were saying in February, Pete, when we were saying to people, look at the supply chain, what's going on. We were talking mainly about supply chain then, and obviously we didn't know how big COVID was going to be, how significant an impact it would make. We were talking about supply chains then, and we were saying, look at how it would impact stuff. So now, add a bit more to that sort of research that you're doing, and have a look at how COVID has impacted your stock in February, March. If things go Pete Tong, right, go badly wrong again with your portfolio, will those same stocks behave the same way? And also, with the stocks that you're looking to potentially buy, yeah, or could buy, how will they behave in the next 3 to 6 months? And with that, look at the stocks which you can utilize the cash in your portfolio with to buy that are going to be resilient over the next 3 months, 6 months, or year, or maybe even outperform. Yeah. So one of the stocks that I've got, which people are now buying, is Loop Up. Nobody wanted it. We've spoken about it briefly, so I'm not going to go over it again. Right. Nobody wanted to buy that at £2. Sorry, at 50 pence back in back at this time last year, Pete.
Yeah.
Right? And today it was a loss-making company. I looked at it for the tech side of it, and it's done okay during the earlier parts of this year. Then it had a profit warning, didn't do so well. And since the lockdown, because COVID has impacted the stock, but positively,
it's really helped them, hasn't it?
It's really, really helped them, right? So you're looking for stocks that will benefit. And I know this is a bizarre thing to say, but benefit from COVID. Right. because the services that they provide are needed. People are having to work from home. You know, Boris Johnson saying work from home if you can work from home.
And the deal they've done with Microsoft Teams, you know, where they can now
Microsoft Teams, which is one of the biggest sort of service providers of working from home services. Today, they announced adjusted operating profit growth of 664%, right? Earnings per share growth of 1,164% to 13.9 pence, Pete. Yeah? So this stock has gone from low 40s, and I think today it's finished at £2.38. But I found that company on my own. Nobody wanted to be involved in that company last year when I was buying that company. Yeah, and now
I remember you saying on the podcast that you sort of like figured out very quickly that with everyone working from home and needing to do Zoom calls, that companies of that ilk should do well, and that was one of your drivers for looking at it, I believe. Is that right?
That was part of the reason, Pete. But the main reason was I was looking, and this goes back to people saying, how do you find these stocks?
Yeah.
And one of the things I do is I look at what's going on in America, what happened in France, happening in Spain. Yeah, I look at other markets. And Zoom was IPOing previously, and it was going at a significant market cap. I was going, that is crazy. How can it be valued at that price? IPO'd, and since then the share price has gone up and up and up and up and up and up, and it's just carried on. It's ridiculous, the value on Zoom right now. Okay. But this company was a company, and I prefer to buy, and I know, you know, other people say you've got to be less UK-centric, but I like to be able to track my company closely, so I end up being quite UK-centric, unfortunately.
I'm the same as you. I feel much more comfortable UK stuff. I find it really difficult buying stocks that are abroad. I just don't feel the same affinity with them. I just don't know them. That's part of it.
And I can't track it as well. And, you know,
I find that.
I've got various websites that I like to follow as well that talk about certain stocks, so I can get up-to-date news and views on the particular company, whereas the plethora of what's out there in the US, I don't really know what their websites are. So I've got my UK-based ones and my European ones as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I bought the stock, Pete, at just over 50 pence on the 4th of October 2019.
Yeah.
And today it comes out with the best results it's ever had, right? But it's been a journey where no one else wanted this stock. And it's lonely being a contrarian when your stock is sinking and no one else wants it, right? So now it's at £2.38 and everybody's buying it. It's like, oh, crikey, that's good. But what's more rewarding is actually now, you know, despite it being up X amount of percentage, is the fact that it's actually profitable, because people were knocking it for it being loss-making. But things have gone so well for it, it's now profitable. And it's looking ahead for the next 6 months and 9 months and thinking, we're going to be okay here. And you know what? I suspect they'll do well going forward as well. And this is the beauty of doing research and being confident enough in your own research to stand alone and not have to worry about what anyone else's opinion about the stock is.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like if you've done your research and you understand what you've got and you understand the value, then you can have a lot more conviction. It's so much easier in that conviction sense. Mate, I want to test your conviction.
Go
on
for
loop,
it.
Right? I can't quite remember because it was this morning and, hey, a few hours have gone by. I read their update today and the first thing that struck me was that they were in line with expectations, which, I mean, up until, I think in recent updates, they've been beating expectations. So that, okay, you know, I'm picking at straws here, but the thing that really hit me, they used the word resilient. And that struck me as a strange word to use. Surely, you know, they're going gangbusters. It's not resilient. It's not like just holding up. They've been doing really well. So I was a bit surprised by the wording. It may just be they're very bad at writing their RNSs, but I just thought that was a really strange word to use.
I think the word resilient is used there, Pete, because one of the words that a lot of the companies are talking about now is resilience coaching and resilience regarding the battering that lots of companies are getting and the headwinds that companies have faced, and the fact that they're growing despite going up against Cisco WebEx, going up against Microsoft and all the other behemoths out there.
Yeah.
So for them, that's potentially why they're saying it's a resilient performance. But he caveats that, and he goes on, I think it's the CEO, Stephen Flavel, and Michael Hughes, the co-CEOs, and it said, "It's been a strong and incredibly busy first half for our business as COVID-19 has accelerated changes in working habits. We're proud to be helping our customers in their business-critical communications in these challenging times. By providing simple, reliable, secure products that are diligently operated and supported, we'd like to thank our team." Yeah, so they're embracing this, Pete. Yeah?
No, you're dead right. I mean, another thing that struck me, and it's not about Loop, this, I also read the results from Cloud Call today. Okay. Is that C-A-L-L? I think it might be. And I thought that was quite interesting because I didn't think they were particularly great results. And what struck me about that was that Cloud Call, which I think used to be Synity, didn't it? Cloud Call really should be really well placed, shouldn't it? I would have thought. So it seems strange that they're not sort of like doing amazing.
Cloud Call, ticker symbol Call, Pete. C-A-L-L.
That's what I got. Yeah, Call. Yeah.
I think part of the reason, Pete, for them is that they are more in the technology communications bit for customer relationship management. So they do a lot of the call center stuff, right?
Oh, okay. So it's not quite the same unified communication.
Not quite the same sort of...
Sorry, I misunderstood it. No, you're right. I misunderstood. It's a good point.
The problem is with all these call centers that some of them have had to go remote themselves. So they can't have a large 200, 300 members of staff in that call center working together. They've had to, you know, reduce their staff count in their own call centers while sending their revenues there. But I think that having quickly looked at it, that their revenues weren't that bad, really. It was still up 11%. Recurring revenues were up 25% year to date. It wasn't that bad, Pete. I think there's still, you know, it's still something that I would keep an eye on.
I think maybe I read it in the context of thinking it was a bit like Loop, and in that context, it wasn't very exciting.
Yeah. They're maybe not, that was not in the same space as Loop, mate.
A quick thing I wanted to bring up quickly was about the FTSE 250.
Go for it.
And this actually applies to quite a lot of the indexes. So I think I'm talking about the CAC 40. I think I'm talking about FTSE small caps that have done it. They did something technically, you know, from a technical analysis point of view, something really interesting, in that they did the classic Bollinger band squeeze. So what they did, so the FTSE 250, basically for 4 months, it's pretty much just gone sideways. It hasn't really done anything in 4 months. And what that means, because the share price has been pretty much sort of flatlining, the Bollinger bands got really tight. They squeezed together. Now, whenever the Bollinger bands squeeze tight together, you will get an explosive move. And the problem is, you don't know if it's going to be upwards or downwards until that move happens. And it's classic that the FTSE 250 did the explosive move downwards.
Hmm.
Yeah. I love that technically, because it's just like a real textbook kind of thing. And I saw it coming. I love it when I see it coming. If people look through my weekend blogs that I write, where I cover a lot of technical analysis stuff, I've wrote about that coming, and it's happened. And I'm like, yeah, that shows that it's the textbooks have been right again.
And this is the beauty of practice, Pete, you know, and keep analysing all the time, because invariably, you know, there's still people that will not technical analysis, but when it works, it's a thing of dreams, really, because it enables you to be prepared, Pete.
Yes.
You know, and this is what I keep saying to people. Why do we keep banging on about research and psychology and all the rest of it? Because it prepares you. You know, you can remain calm. You know, you're
that
not
is
panicking
such
because
a good point.
When you panic and you're stressed, you make more mistakes. You compound mistakes. It becomes costly. Yeah, and if you can remain calm, whether it be using mindfulness or technical analysis or neuro-linguistic programming, whatever it is that works for you, transcendental meditation, whatever it works for you, you've got to stay calm if you're investing in the stock market, because it doesn't always go the way that you want it to go. And that stock, like the CFO said, was doing great guns, can come out with a profit warning in a heartbeat. That takeover that you think that's going to happen at that particular price that everyone's talking about may not happen. So you've got to be prepared.
I find it's that control thing. And I think this is a wider psychological point. It's that thing of you feel so much more comfortable when you're in control. And it's like, for me, I didn't get stressed at all on Monday because I knew it was coming. We've been saying on this podcast for some time now, I've been writing in my blogs for some time, that some sort of pullback was going to happen in the autumn. It's not difficult to see it's going to happen. And as a consequence, I had a nice FTSE 100 short on to hedge my portfolio. I'm about 40% hedged. And it was lovely, you know. It's like, I'm ready for it. I don't care. And it just makes it so much more bearable. So whereas people are panic on Monday going, oh my God, it's all crashing and I'm down so many million percent on my portfolio, it's like, well, I just like, yeah, I saw it coming and I'm ready. Who cares?
The thing I would say, though, Pete, is I would prefer for the people that are saying markets are going to crash and I'm hiding behind the sofa and I've got my armor plating on, right, to come out in the evening and say, oh, you know, crikey, you know, my stock, my holdings, these stocks of mine are down 3%, 5%, 7%, 10%. The same people that are saying the markets are going to go Pete Tong this today don't come out in the evening and say any of their stocks are down. Yeah, they only come back and tweet about these stocks when they're going back up again. So if you're going to, you know, cause people undue stress or entertain them with the fact that the stocks that you hold have also gone down. Yeah? Say which of your five stocks have gone down 3%, 4%, 5% or more significantly. Not only come onto Twitter and other places and talk about the stocks that you've got that are now going up. Don't just share good news. Share the good and the bad so people can learn from it.
Oh, you've got to share. Yeah, you've got to, you know, if you're going to tell people what you're doing, you've got to give them the whole truth. And was it the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, or whatever they say?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, what are my stocks, Pete, which it's appearing now and I'm looking at it and thinking, scratch my head. You know, IPF, International Personal Finance, Pete. I hold that stock.
Oh, God, yeah.
And it's one of those, you know, sort of sectors that everyone hates, you know.
Oh, mate, that's one that I just I'm amazed you bought that.
It's a hated stock.
No, right? I'm thinking more from the ethical viewpoint, because you're rightly quite an ethical guy, and that just seems a funny thing to be holding. I don't know why.
You've got a valid point there, Pete. It's a bit of a contradiction.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to like
no. I'm in agreement with you, Pete. It is a contradiction given all the charitable work that I do and all the people I support, businesses I do, the young people I go out and do work with. But in various communities, and I'm on about wealthy communities as well as, you know, the estates that no one wants to go near.
Oh, they do a good thing. Yeah,
they do some works, and this is globally as well. They do some work which enables the people who normally would go to the people that, you know, would hospitalise people, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Harry, the hat with the knife, the loan shark.
Loans to people who otherwise would be at the bequest of loan sharks, Pete.
Absolutely.
And I've looked at this company. I've done my research on the company. I've done my research on the CEO, CFO and all the rest of it. And what they're doing is of note. And they've been around for a long time and they could be around for a long time going forward. And even more recently, the NAV right now is at £1.65.
Right.
The stock, though, having purchased it at 39p, if I recall correctly.
So that's the net asset value.
Net asset value is 165.
Yeah.
It's a recovery stock. If we get through COVID and they can collect more monies and all the rest of it, it will be okay, and they'll probably start paying a divvy again. And it's a sort of stock, Pete, where having bought it at 39p and just above 58p, it was fine up until the beginning of this month when it was at 71p and it's just rolled over and it's now at 51.50p.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, I'm still in profit with it, but am I going to have to wait a lot longer for this to return? And the COVID situation and the lockdown situation might impact them going forward. But I'm thinking, well, you know what? The NAV's there. It's a and financially they're okay. They've got to sort a bit of financing out. At some point or other, we might get some news. But the reason why I've bought it is because of their digital arm, Pete. That's the strength of it. They're now collecting money via the digital aspects of their business.
So that's more fintech, isn't it? Really?
So it's getting towards the fintech. It's only a small part of the business at the minute and looking to grow it. It's not a stock for everybody. It's not something I would advocate anybody buy. Yeah, it's a stock that I've purchased knowing the risks.
They operate in Mexico, don't they?
Yes, they do.
And there's another country, like, where is it, Poland or something?
Poland, yeah.
So Poland and Mexico mainly, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like I said before, Poland, I don't think, is that affected by C-19. Mexico, I mean, I imagine that will get affected by C-19
But it probably won't
be shut down or anything, because they just don't shut down these kind of countries.
It will impact them, Pete. Every country around the world is impacted. They're in Mexico, Australia, Finland, Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, Poland, Romania, Hungary, Czech Republic, and Spain. All those countries impacted in some way or other by COVID. But I've taken the risks. I've position sized it accordingly. I know the risks. That's a stock which I've invested in, and I know at some point I'll either be wrong or I'll be right, and at some point or other I'll learn something from it. But that's it. I'm not saying to anybody to go out and buy this stock. I'm just saying this is another one that could prove to be a mistake of mine. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Look, I'll tell you what. If that NAV is a sensible representation of what the value is, then in theory it looks like it could be a bit cheap.
We'll see. Time will tell, mate. As with all these things, that time has a great way of showing you what the truth is.
Hey, mate, I'm aware that we got asked some questions. I don't think we'll really have time to cover them on this podcast. We've been blabbing on for a while. But Scott Parker asked us how we find ideas. That's quite a big topic, so I think we should to try and cover that in the next one. And we will cover it, I promise, yeah? And VSIHV, said around the idea that a load of people are clustering in stocks, in the same stocks, and is that going to be a problem? I don't know if you want to cover that now or where we should go.
We'll cover it more so later on, but
let's do it in the next quickly podcast. We'll make sure we address those two issues.
We'll
address
them, but I think quickly, the thing with clustering for me is the fact that you've got to be mindful when you join the cluster, right? Because when lots of people are talking about that stock,
if it's a small stock, if it's like Vodafone or something,
whether it's a small stock or a large stock, if lots of people are in that stock and they're all running for the exit, it's likely that the platform that you're using, and when you're trying to get out, you're the one left there where the door's shut and you can't sell the amount that you want to sell, or you're being put through to phone, and by the time you've got through on the phone, the price that you thought you were going to get is much, much lower. I prefer to buy a stock which hardly anybody is in. And part of my research regarding some of the stocks that I buy is using Twitter for that. I look and see how many people are talking about this stock. The fewer, for me, the better. If I see a stock and loads of people are talking about it, I probably won't invest in it.
It's the classic thing about a quiet ADV FM bulletin board, isn't it? If you've got a quiet board, that's a good thing. If you've got a bulletin board that's extremely busy with loads of people on it, that might be a stock you want to avoid.
Absolutely. And equally, when you see a lot of clustering, going back to AIM and FTSE stocks being ramped by respected and unrespected people on social media, is that if loads of people are talking about it and there's a cluster, a large group of people in that stock, you've got to be wary of the fact that that stock may not be worthy of the attention it's getting. And it's the reason why it's getting that amount of attention is for somebody else's reasons. Okay, I wanted to thank everyone for the feedback they've been giving us. We've had some fantastic feedback regarding Twin Peaks number 31. Once again, in writing this particular podcast up, you can find a lot of the feedback we've had on Twitter, social media, on the actual write-up, which is on the Twin Peaks page, the news page on the Conquers Corner page and Twin Peaks page. So a lot of the people that have given us feedback, we've put their name in there and what they said about the podcasts. regarding their feedback. Just wanted to thank everyone for their continued feedback and support, and for their retweets. We're still getting some fantastic listens across the board. So whether it be in the US, Finland, Ukraine. For some reason, we seem to be getting a lot more listeners in Stoke and in Bristol. So you listeners that are in Stoke and Bristol, thank you ever so much.
Are they in a heavy lockdown there?
I don't think so. I just think more people are finding us, Pete. You know, so in the UK, we've got, that's where our main base of listeners are. But we're completely happy and love the fact we're getting listeners from all over the world. So thank you for your continued support. And if you're enjoying it, please subscribe. As I said to you before, we're on Apple iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, Overcast, and we'll be adding some more going forward. So look for us under the Conquest Corner name or the Twin Peaks Investing name, and you'll find us on those platforms. But we will be adding some more going forward. So ladies and gents, thank you ever so much. Take care. Stay safe. Pete, what do you want to add going out?
Just to mention, if you're new to the podcast and stuff, if you've just discovered us, you might find the older ones, the sort of archive we've got, useful. You can find that on via my website, www.wheeliedealer.weebly.com. And if you go to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast page, the whole gamut of the archive is on there. So you can pick out and listen to them at your heart's content. You might find them interesting. And if you subscribe on your podcast platform, you should be able to find them on there as well. And you know, the way we do them, it's probably worth listening to ones that, you know, from the back catalogue, because there is a lot of educational stuff in them, as well as talking about individual stocks and things.
Absolutely. I mean, the beauty of what we're trying to do here, to reiterate what we said earlier, it's about education, you know, because the better you get at investing in stocks, the quicker you're able to get to your goal, whatever that goal is, whether it's be paying for your son or your daughter's education, or for your son or your daughter's wedding, or to pay for the fact that you no longer have to work for anybody, to be completely independent. Because the wealthiest people in the world aren't the richest people. The richest people are the people who have got time to choose to do whatever they want to do.
That's so true. The other thing I'd just mention quickly is, you probably picked up that we're sponsored by SharePad, and we greatly appreciate SharePad taking their interest in us. If you want to subscribe to SharePad, you can get a month's subscription free, effectively. There's links on my website, on Peter's website, all sorts of websites. And just if you want to sign up, then great. I'm sure you'll find it very useful. I use SharePad. Peter uses SharePad. It's a good system.
It's great. And even more so for those that are investing. But, you know, for those that are trading and want to see quicker results, the platform's brilliant for that. And we've got some significant traders that actually use that platform as well.
Cool.
Okay, folks, that's us. It's Friday. Sorry. This will be
Friday. What's going on?
This will be out on Friday. It's currently Wednesday, the 23rd. It's 17. Sorry, I've lost it now, Pete. It's five past.
All over the place.
It's 7:05 in the evening, folks. So Pete and I have been in looking at the market since 7 a.m. So this is 12 hours in. So we're losing the will to live. So we're just going to call it a day now. We'll look forward to seeing you guys and ladies in 2 weeks' time. Take care, stay safe, God bless, and listen to the rules, abide by the rules, keep yourself safe, God bless, and goodbye.
Cheers, see ya.
Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.